Are you ready for a good time?
I said Todd. I was going to say good time, and then you said pod, and then at the last minute I said Todd.
Are you ready for a good Todd?
Todd time.
Hello, welcome to inherent...
and intraherent
and casting. Inherent cast, part 14, I believe. Infinite cast, part two, inherent cast.
Yeah.
Session 14. we are here with you.
Yes.
There's something beeping where we're living, and I can't tell if its origin is
here?
Our place or someplace adjacent to us, and it's been happening for about a month now, and if you know me at all, you can only imagine how insane it is making me.
Agony.
Because... If it is something of my gear, and it is beeping, and I can't even identify what is beeping, death.
Horror.
I might as well just kill myself.
I have tried. I was in the driveway, and I was
walking around yes,
like a bloodhound. I guess it would be ears instead of nose. But being like, if I stand here, does it get louder?
Yes.
And like, it honestly, it is like, it's ambient. It is sourceless. I have no idea.
Right now, we're inside the place, and it sounds like it's coming from inside the
house. But it's not inside.
But it's not. No.
Yeah.
Sometimes it seems louder than others.
This is like Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah, the telltale beep. It's from a printer that I killed earlier, buried under the floorboards.
God, honestly, we should, as you turn it to surf highlights, you should honestly just leave it on Baywatch. Our Samsung TV has a 24/7 Baywatch channel, but you might get a little distracted, Christopher. From the bus.
I mean,
a lady just rollerbladed by in a little mini skirt and sports bra.
Baywatch is sexy, but it's not as sexy as, like, having not watched a lot of Baywatch when it was actually on.
Mm-hmm.
It really, you know, the joke of the 90s is that it was like entirely slow motion shots of women running in bikinis.
Yes.
And I would say that that is less than 2% of the show.
The way I would describe Baywatch,
it's mostly beach peril.
It's beach peril. And like the thing that Baywatch is horny for, it's not bodies. It's like life force.
Yes.
It's about like being alive, running, swimming, feeling the sun,
diving,
feeling the cold water on your titties. Like, it is, oh my goodness.
She's pretty hot. Yeah.
And it is about titties a little bit, but it's about the life force of titties.
Oh, like, she's sad. What happened?
I think this. Oh no,
oh, no she's bulimic. Oh no.
The
fingers went in the mouth and it cut to commercial.
The lifeguard went and ate some cookies, and then she just started making herself puke. Trigger warning, started making herself puke in the bathroom.
Oh,
so many situational tragedies.
Yes.
No, everyone talks about the sitcom, but what about the sit trash?
But see, you know, you got this hot lady in the red one piece bikini.
Yeah.
In Baywatch, and you're like, all right, yeah, titillation, and then no, bulimia.
Bulimia.
Plot. Not sexy.
Yeah. I love it. It's true.
It's
like
good.
Baywatch truly is about, like, David Hasselhoff is the leader of the crew, and it's all about like it is your human right to enjoy yourself at the beach.
Yes.
Safely.
Yes.
And anyone or anything that gets in the way of that, well, they're going to fucking take him down.
Baywatch is good vibes. And if you also have a Samsung TV that has the free Samsung TV channels, I would highly recommend throwing on some Baywatch. It's channel 1063 in the
on the
Samsung TV thing.
Yeah.
Ooh, there's an entire Degrassi station. This thing is crazy.
There's a 21 Jump Street station.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something called the Murdoch Mysteries. That's just Ion.
Yeah.
Whatever. Anyway, it feels right to talk about like current TV technology in the context of Inherent Vice, the book we haven't gotten back to in a couple of weeks. I just refresh myself.
Great.
I think we're okay. Should we get into it?
Yeah, let's do some.
So Doc had just talked to Tito, who runs like a limo company, and Tito was kind of like, I think this was like an inside
his shitty limo.
Mickey got jumped, and then before that he was spending time with Dr. Blatnoid and Japonica.
Of course.
Naughty cyborg Japonica.
It's not groovy.
Soup of the night.
It's not groovy to be insane.
All right, so let's keep going. Chapter 12. Doc made a couple of phone calls and took the back route up by way of Burbank and Santa Paula, reaching the Ojai turnoff just before lunchtime. There were plenty of signs to point the way to the Criscolidon Institute. The High Rent Laughing Academy was located close enough.
The Laughing Academy.
The Umbrella Academy.
They do this on True and On sometimes. It's just all the funny things for prisoner and asylum.
Yeah.
The Gray Bar Hotel. I like that one. That's for prison.
I mean, even thinking about it, the loony bin is funny. It's like a bin. It was located close a bin of loony.
The loony container store.
The loony container store. Fuck. Was located close enough to Crotona Hill to cash in on the mystiques of better known spiritual facilities like the Inner School and the AMORC, the AMORC. The main house, a red tile and white stucco Mission Revival mansion, was surrounded by 100 acres of orchards and pasture and sycamore woods. At the front gate, Doc was met by long-haired attendants in flowing robes under which they were packing Smiths in shoulder rigs.
Cool.
Larry Sportello, I have an appointment. If you wouldn't mind, brother. Sure, grope ahead. I ain't packing. Hell, I ain't even holding. The procedure was to park in a lot by the gate and wait for an Institute shuttle bus to run you up to the main house. The gate had a sign over it which read, "Straight is hip." Doc had got himself up early today in an Edwardian jacket.
It's hip, to be square.
Doc had got himself up today in an Edwardian jacket. It's base to be trad. An Edwardian jacket and bell-bottoms in not quite matching and no longer fashionable shades of brown. Narrowly trimmed late movie mustache, hair brill creamed into a high pompadour with long sideburns, all meant to suggest a sleazy and vaguely anxious go-between who couldn't himself begin to afford the fees this place would be asking. From the looks he was getting, the put-together seemed to be working. We were just about to go have lunch, the associate director, Dr. Threepley, making with a fake sympathetic wrinkled forehead. Why don't you join us? Afterward, we can show you around the facility. Dr. Threepley was a shifty specimen with that quality now and then observed in aluminum siding and screen door salesman of once having been through something, a marriage, a criminal proceeding, traumatic enough to have torqued him permanently out of tolerance so that he now had to beg potential clients to ignore this unspecified character handicap. Waiting on tables at lunch in the administrative lounge were inmates who seemed to be working in lieu of paying the full fee. Thank you, Kimberly. Hands steady as a rock today, it seems. So happy you noticed, Dr. Threepley. More soup? Doc, with a forkful of some unfamiliar vegetable loaf halfway to his mouth, reflected that if these folks out here were mental cases, then what about further back in the kitchen, well out of the public gaze? Like doing the cooking, for example? Try some of this Chenin Blanc, Mr. Sportello, right from our own vineyard. Doc had learned from his dad Leo and later cruising supermarket shelves that Blanc meant white, and that California whites tended to be, well, at least whiter than the queasy shade of yellow he was looking at. He squinted at the label and noticed an ingredient list several lines long, with the note in parentheses continued on back of bottle, but whenever he tried, as casually as he could, to have a look at the label on the back, he noticed he was getting these stares, and sometimes people even reached and turned the label away so he couldn't read it.
I know we should... I'm trying very actively not to think about the movie too much, but I can very much see, like, while this conversation's going, Joaquin Phoenix, like, trying to reach around and, like, subtly turn the bottle and, like, there's ever a bottle across from, like, harshly jerking it back.
Yeah. You've been here with us before, said one of the staff shrinks. I know I've seen your face. First time I've been down here. Normally I never get much south of South City. And abnormally, Dr. Threepley chuckled. What? I only meant that with any number of qualified facilities in the Bay Area, why bother coming all the way down here to us? The others at the table leaned forward as if keenly interested in Doc's answer. Time to pull out some of the stuff he'd run through with Sortilege. I believe, said Doc earnestly, that just as chakras can be identified on the human body, so does the body of Earth have these special places. Concentrations of spiritual energy, grace, if you will.
Ley lines.
And that Ojai, for the presence of Mr. J. Krishnamurti alone, certainly qualifies as one of the more blessed of planetary chakras, which regrettably cannot be said for San Francisco or its immediate vicinity.
That's a good question. San Francisco, collection of positive or negative energies? I kind of think collection of negative energies.
Negative right now. I mean, if you ask Joan Didion, always.
Yeah. I think people harness the negative energies for their power at the height, but there's always
Alcatraz, man.
Yeah, it's always like a chaotic energy that escapes from there. And even when it was like the height of the hippie era, I feel like it was always the dangerous edge of hippies.
Even its shape is like, it's a sort of a nub of you know, everyone kind of
That little peninsula
rammed in together.
Did you know that the actual city limits of San Francisco take up the exact same amount of square miles as the Denver International Airport?
I just saw that being shared, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah. Land use. Crazy.
After a small patch of silence, somebody said, "You mean Walnut Creek isn't a chakra?" Which drew nodding and chuckling from colleagues. Some religious thing, supposed Dr. Threepley, maybe trying to restore an air of professionalism at the table, though what profession was unclear. After lunch, Doc was bustled around on a tour, which included dormitories, a staff lounge with a dozen TV sets, and a full-service bar, the sensory deprivation tanks, the Olympic-sized pool, and the rock climbing wall. "What's in here?" Doc, trying to seem no more than casually curious. "A brand new wing for housing our non-compliant cases unit," announced Dr. Threepley. "Not quite operational yet, but soon to be the Institute's pride and joy. You may certainly have a look inside if you wish, though there's nothing much to see." He swung open one of the doors, and just inside the vestibule, Doc caught a glimpse of the same publicity photo he'd seen at the Wolfman home, of Sloan in a skip loader delivering an oversized check. As closely as he could, he scanned the photograph again and noticed now that none of the other faces in it seemed to be Mickey's. Mickey was nowhere in sight, but Doc was visited by the creepy feeling that somewhere close by, in some weird indeterminate space whose residents weren't sure where they were, inside or out of the frame, might indeed be some version of Mickey, not quite in the same way that the lady with the big check was a version of Sloan, but altered and, he shivered, maybe mentally or even physically compromised. Past this vestibule here, he could make out a long corridor lined with identical knobless doors receding into metallic shadow. Before the main door swung shut again, Doc had just had time to notice a chunk of marble with a bronze plaque that read, "Made possible through the selfless generosity of a devoted friend of Chryskylodon."
Is Doc a good detective? He is definitely very observant.
Yeah, and he's good at getting in places.
Yes.
If Sloan was endowing loony bins with Mickey's money, why not take some credit? Why be anonymous? "Nice," said Doc. "Come, we'll have a look outside." As they moved out into the grounds, Doc could see, through the haze, eucalyptus trees, colonnaded walkways, neoclassic temples faced in white marble, fountains fed by hot springs. Everything looked like painted glass mats in old Technicolor movies. Well-to-do nutcases and their attendants drifted now and then in the distance. As Aunt Reet had suggested, there was a lot of capital improvement in progress. Landscaping crews tossed through the air and neatly caught long, curved stacks of clay flower pots. Framers played hardcore acid rock and roll out of truck radios and hammered along with the beat. Paving crews shoveled blacktop and rollers rolled it smooth. There were tennis courts and swimming pools and outdoor volleyball. The Zen Garden, according to Dr. Threepley, had been transported from Kyoto, reassembled here exactly in place, each grain of white sand, each textured rock. A ceremonial bell stood nearby, and next to it, Doc noticed a strange shadowy gazebo, like a steel engraving in some old and likely forbidden book, out of which he thought he heard sounds of chanting.
Should we get a ceremonial bell?
I thought you were going to say, should we get a ceremonial gazebo?
I think a ceremonial bell.
Let me think about it.
All right. And then we just ring it 3 times at 5 o'clock every day.
Okay. And then we make martinis?
Yeah, something like that. Just a quick a quitting time bell.
Okay. Dong. Oh, it's never quitting time in the O'Brien White House.
It's true. We work around the clock. Uh-huh. We shove the poles in the holes.
Uh-huh. Advanced therapy group, said Threepley. He led Doc to a concealed spiral stairway, and they descended into a sort of grotto, damp and dimly lit. The temperature dropped 20 degrees. From down the damp corridors, the sound of chanting got louder. Threepley led Doc into a soundproof space behind one-way mirrors, and among underground shadows green as aquarium slime, Doc immediately recognized one of a dozen kneeling figures in robes as Coy Harlingen. Now, what the fuck? As it turned out, this was not the only familiar face around here. Lounging by the observation window was an orderly who had apparently brought the inmates here and was waiting to take them back. He was passing the time with the age-old diversion of rolling up his necktie, holding it for a minute under his chin, and then lifting his chin and then letting the tie unroll again. Hours of fun. Doc didn't notice the tie itself until he'd been watching this for a while, and then he either thought, holy shit, or actually hollered it out loud. He wasn't sure right away which, because what this gorilla happened to be wearing was one of Mickey Wolfman's own custom-made specials. In fact, the exact tie Doc had failed to find in Mickey's closet, the one with Shasta hand-painted on it, in a pose submissive enough to break an ex-old man's heart. That's if he was in the mood. Doc was just able to return to the present tense in time to hear Dr. Threepley wrapping up some commentary and asking if there were any questions. Several, in fact. Doc wanted at least to mention to the gorilla by the window something like, "Hey, that's my ex-old lady you're fondling there." But how wise was that? The world had just been disassembled. Anybody here could be working any hustle you could think of. And it was long past time to be, as Shaggy would say, like, "getting out of here, Scoob." Loaded down with application kits and institute literature, Doc climbed onto the shuttle back to the main gate. At the creepy gazebo stop, one passenger got on who turned out to be Coy Harlingen in a hooded robe, making dummy-up gestures, which included, "get off when I do." They got off by the dodgeball court. I love the idea of these loonies playing dodgeball.
What is the name? We've already done this, I know, but what is the name of the real-life institute that this is mocking?
Esalen?
The Esalen, yes. Esalen? Thank you.
Some kind of regional all-institution playoffs were in progress with a lot of matching t-shirts and screaming, not all of it playoff-related, and nobody paid much attention to Coy and Doc. "Here, put this on." One of the hooded robes people wore around here, which Doc doubted came from a religious supply house, more like some clearance sale of no longer stylish beachwear. He slid into it. "Wow, makes a man feel like Lawrence of Arabia." "As long as we walk slow and stone, nobody's going to bother us." "Here, maybe this will help," producing and lighting a pinner of gold Colombian. They passed it back and forth, and after a while, Coy said, "So you got to see Hope." "For a minute, she's okay, and looks like she's been staying clean, too." So he's seen him now twice, but they've not even been able to speak out loud about Hope.
Yes.
Because he's been surrounded by
yes.
agents of chaos. It wasn't easy to see exactly what was going on with Coy behind his shades, but his voice dropped to a whisper. "You talked to her?" "I put my head in the front door, pretended to be one of these magazine hustlers, caught just a glimpse of that little amethyst too, and from what I could see, they're both doing fine. And I almost sold Hope a subscription to Psychology Today." "Well," Coy shaking his head slowly, as if listening to a solo, "you don't know how worried I've been. Maybe more than he meant to say. She kicked? Are you sure? Is she on a program, or how's she doing it?" "She's back teaching," is all she said. "Public health, drug awareness, something like that." "And you're not going to tell me where?" "Not even if I knew." "You really think that I would ever start giving either of them shit?" "I don't do matrimonials, man. I have a terrible history of putting in, and it's never ended well." Coy walked along with his face in the shadow of his hood. "Don't matter, I guess." "How's that?" "No way I can ever go back to them." Doc knew that tone of voice and hated it. It reminded him of too many vomit-splattered toilets, freeway overpasses, edges of cliffs in Hawaii, always pleading with men younger than himself, distraught with what they were so sure was love. It was actually why he quit doing matrimonials, in spite of which he now found himself prompting. "You can't go back, because if you did..." Coy shook his head. "It would be my ass, understand? My family's, too. This is like a gang. Once you're in, por vida." "Did you know that when you joined up?" "All I knew is we couldn't do each other no good staying together. The baby was looking like shit and worse every day. We'd get fucked up and just sit there and go, 'We're dragging each other down. What are we going to do?' And then end up doing nothing. Or we'd say, 'Wait till we score again and that's out of the way. Then we'll come up with something.' But that never happened either. So here came this opportunity. These people up here had money. It wasn't like it was Bible freaks wandering up and down the beach screaming at you or nothing. They really wanted to help." It was occurring to Doc now, as he recalled what Jason Velveeta had said about vertical integration, that if the Golden Fang could get its customers strung out, why not turn around and also sell them a program to help them kick? Get them coming and going, twice as much revenue, and no worries about new customers. As long as American life was something to be escaped from, the cartel could always be sure of a bottomless pool of new customers. "They just gave me the tour here," Doc said. "Thinking about signing yourself in?" "Not me. Couldn't afford it." By now, they were tuned to each other enough that Coy, if he wanted, could take this for an opening to talk about what kind of a deal he'd made, but he just paced along in silence. "Short of actual marriage counseling," Doc said carefully, "if I did just run a fast check and happen to find some angle you maybe haven't thought of..." "Nothing personal. Was that a small tremor of anger? But there's too much you haven't thought of. You want to run your check? I can't stop you, but maybe you'll wish you hadn't. They had walked almost to the gate, and the shadows around the place were lengthening. Back at the beach, the sea breeze would be turning about around about now. I can dig you're trying to chase me off of this, Doc said. That's also a bad idea for me trying to phone you. But look, whatever it is you're caught inside, I'm still out here on the outside of it. I can move in ways you may not be able to. I can't come any further now, Coy said. They were in an apricot orchard near the gate. Here, let me have the robe back. Doc must have taken his eye off Coy for a second. Somehow, in the act of shaking the robe out or folding it or something, it was taken from his grasp, flourished like a magician's cape, and when Doc looked where it had been, Coy was already gone. Doc took 101 back and arrived at the grade up to Thousand Oaks just in time to have to brake abruptly for a paisley painted VW bus full of giggling dopers which had materialized in front of him.
Wait, I have to take a break. They're fighting a giant octopus on Baywatch.
Oh, shit. Hold on. He's got a knife.
He's got a knife. He's going to go for the tentacle.
Oh.
This is the same episode as the bulimia plot.
The A plot is
a giant octopus. Oh, he's really going for it.
It's just sort of disembodied tentacles.
And then you sometimes see the head.
I love
an
stuff like this.
An octopus with no head.
My octopus teacher. Oh.
Severed tentacle.
Severed tentacle.
All right. Sorry. I didn't mean to distract, but I had to point out this giant octopus plot.
Yeah.
And prop.
The prop is great. Yeah. I mean, that's what the other thing is, that Baywatch is truly like a, you know, it's making cinema.
Yeah.
Obviously, they don't have a fucking CGI octopus, but no. They do have just a big plastic rubber tentacle.
Yeah. And you got to.
Oh, no.
It's back for more.
The octopus got her again. Ah, fuck.
Just when you thought you had enough.
Fight.
All right. We should go back in.
Okay. Giggling dopers. The passing lane was already solid with semis trying to swerve around the VW, so there was no point trying to go there. Once Doc might have grown impatient, but with age and wisdom, he had come to understand that these units never had any fucking compression to begin with, owing to engineering decisions taken long ago at Wolfsburg, I guess. He shifted down, reached for the volume knob on the radio, which was playing Something Happened to Me Yesterday by the Stones, and figured he'd get up the hill when he got there, which would have been fine, except now he had time to think about Vicky's necktie and begin to wonder how the ape who was wearing it had come by it exactly, and recall unavoidably the hand-painted image of Shasta Fay on her back, spread and wet, and if he was not mistaken, though he'd only caught a fast glimpse, just about to come, too. Mickey must have been wearing that particular tie when they grabbed him, just took it out of the closet that morning at random, or maybe because of something deeper. Then when they processed him into an inmate uniform at Criskylodon, they confiscated the tie, and that's when the ape saw it and just decided to take it. Or had Mickey exchanged it later for some mental slam favor, a phone call, a smoke, somebody else's meds? Back in junior college, professors had pointed out to Doc the useful notion that the word is not the thing, the map is not the territory. He supposed you could extend this also to the nudie necktie is not the girl, but he wasn't rational enough right now to feel anything but ripped off. Not for Mickey so much as, ancient history by now or whatever, for Shasta. Forget the fantasies her picture might have aroused in the ape. How little could she have meant to Mickey for him to let it happen? How are we doing on time?
We're at like 23 minutes.
So keep some more. We haven't done this in a while.
Yeah. Well, we're also going to do another one tomorrow, right?
I think so. Let's see where this goes.
Okay, great.
Doc got back to the beach just at early evening, coming up the back slope of the dunes and over to a hazy view of bay and headlands, a pure sunset of the colors steel takes on as it heats to glowing, lights of airliners, some blinking and some steady, ascending silently from the airport in short, clear curves before setting out to traverse the sky, sometimes finding brief conjunction with an early star, then moving on. He decided to stop in at the office, and as he was letting himself in, the phone started ringing quietly as if to itself. Where have you been? Said Fritz. That's the computer guy, I think. No place I'd recommend. What is it? You sound terrible. This thing's turning sour, Fritz. I think I found out where they took Mickey. He might not be there any longer, or even alive, but either way, he could be pretty fucked up by now. Better I don't know too much, but how about the police? You're sure they can't help? Doc found a tobacco cigarette and lit up. Never thought I'd hear that from you. Just slipped out. I wish... Holy shit, did he feel tired. Just once I could trust them. But it's like the force of gravity. They never pull in any but the one direction. Always admired your principles, Doc, especially now, because I ran those plate numbers you gave me. I double-checked this, by the way. That was Clancy Sherlock, Glenn Sherlock's sister, who had taken down license plate numbers from people who were, like, tailing her.
Who is also the woman who was, like, working the motorcycle?
Yeah, she people. Likes yeah. She likes motorcycle men.
Okay, great.
I ran those plate numbers you gave me, and it turns out that some of them belong to members of the L.A. Police Reserves. Seems a lot of those guys joined up during the Watts Clam Bake so they could play Run, N-Word, Run and have it all be legal. Since then, they've...
Wait, did they actually use
they
the N-Word?
I don't like saying that word.
All right, that's okay. But I feel like it's important for me to know whether or not it's in the...
Yeah. Since then, they've been like a little private militia the LAPD uses whenever they don't want to look bad in the papers.
Uh-huh.
You got a pencil? You can copy these down. Just don't tell me what happens. Oh, you Fritz. Not at all. Any excuse to feel like I'm surfing the wave of the future here. Just got this new hire in. Name of Sparky. Has to call his mom if he's going to be late for supper. Only guess what? We're his trainees. He gets on this ARPANET trip, and I swear it's like acid. A whole nother strange world. Time, space, all that shit. So when they going to make it illegal, Fritz? What? Why would they do that? Remember how they outlawed acid as soon as they found out it was a channel to something they didn't want us to see? Why should information be any different? I better get Sparky to hurry up then. Today he tells me he thinks he knows a way to get into the C2 computer up in Sacramento without them knowing. So pretty soon, whatever the State Bureau has, we'll have too. You can think of us as C2 South. Just then they heard the line current drop. Somebody was tapping in. Well, he's a dang good retriever, Fritz went on unperturbed. If it's there, old Sparky will find it. He loves that shit. Remind him to remind me to pick him up some of those liver snaps, Doc said. A dang good retriever. Sorry. Back at his place, Doc found Dinas with an unlit joint hanging off his lip, sitting by the alley, freaking out. Dinas? Fucking boards, man. What happened? They trashed my place. Doc almost said, how can you tell? But he saw how upset he was. Important thing is, are you okay? I wasn't there, but if I was, they would have trashed me too. The boards, the whole band, Dinas, the rhythm guitar, the bass player, they all broke in and then what? They were looking for those pictures I took, man, I know it. My stash was all over the floor. They cleaned out the fridge, put everything in the ostracizer, and made smoothies and didn't even leave any for anybody
ostracizer.
Else. Isn't it the osterizer?
The osterizer.
Oster. O-S-T-E-R.
Yeah.
That's a blender brand.
Yeah.
I think my grandma had one.
Does he call it the ostracizer?
The ostracizer.
That's pretty funny.
We should start calling our blender something.
The ostracizer.
The pulverizer.
The disentangler.
The disemboweler. Anybody else? That's you, Dinas. Why should they leave you any? Dinas thought about this, and Doc watched him start to calm down. Come on in the house, and we'll relight that thing in your mouth there. Because, Dinas answered Doc's question a bit later, they're supposed to be freaks. A freak surfadelic band. That's their public image. And freaks don't rip off other freaks. And most of all, if they take your food, freaks share it. Didn't you see that movie? There's this actual code of the freaks. I think, Doc said, that was like 1932, some traveling circus story. Different kind of freak. Whatever.
Google gobble.
Those boards didn't behave no better than fucking straights do. You sure this was the boards, Dinas? I mean, were there any, like, witnesses? Witnesses, Dinas laughed tragically. If there were, they'd be running around all asking for autographs and shit. Look, I've got the negatives and the proof sheet, and Bigfoot's got that print with Koi in it, so whoever it was, if they didn't find anything at your place, chances are they won't be back. Oh, my Chinese food, Dina's shaking his head. Once a month, he ordered 30 meals from South Bay Cantonese out on Sepulveda and kept them in the freezer to thaw out one by one for meals over the next month. So smart.
That's pretty smart.
Why would they... Even the General So's broccoli left over from last night. I was saving that, man. We can go maybe a little. Okay, I think I see another segment.
Okay. We're at 30 minutes now. So next time.
Or what do you? I mean, what do you think?
Is that a segment break?
That's a segment break. Not
okay.
A segment
let's
break.
Let's stop there.
Okay.
Again, I think we're going to do this tomorrow.
We've done a lot. Tomorrow, I will sing. I will sing a dickhead song.
Great. You can invent the rhythm for that.
Maybe I could compose it for real. Put on a ukulele.
I'm thinking about the idea of a crime syndicate owning a rehab facility. And yes. I'm wondering if that has ever actually happened, because it is a pretty good idea and seems fairly easy to do.
Get them
coming and going.
The mafia, right? Doesn't that seem like something that the mafia would
do? My understanding of the mafia is that they're pretty dumb. Please, if you're in the mafia, I don't mean you. I mean all your enemies,
brothers.
Your rivals. I guess if we're taking anything from The Sopranos, like everything in The Sopranos is like, you know, the tiniest ticky-tacky little like sanitation contracts and stuff. Ever owning,
I'll
like,
push back and say I don't think they're dumb. I think they don't want to work that much.
Yes,
it's all about not working,
which is reasonable.
Which
that
is
the point.
Real.
Yeah, the point of crime.
The mafia is an R/ anti-work concept.
And managing a rehab facility does seem like you got to be at least a little bit. Well, you know what? You don't, because there are a lot of rehab facilities out there that are actual like abusive scams.
I mean, I believe I've read about this, that like we don't really have like a regulatory system for rehab.
Yeah.
And that, you know, at least.
Which is why you can have all those like child torturing facilities. Again, listen to TruAnon for more info.
I mean,
we
haven't even figured out how to like get people recovered from addiction.
Yeah.
Weirdly, I have a prediction, which is that I think Ozempic is going to be like they're going to use it like a fire hose against all kinds of like compulsive behavior. People like gambling problem, Ozempic. Eating problem, Ozempic. Alcohol problem, Ozempic.
It's essentially an anhedonia drug.
It is.
Right?
It takes away your like hunger.
Your hunger. That, again, a very Wallacean concept. I feel like.
Oh God, he would have had a field day with Ozempic. That's crazy. Yeah, I don't know. Why was I saying that? We're talking about rehab.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't have a. I don't think we have even like a national system. There's no way to even know like whether a rehab works or not. I don't know. It seems awful. And so it makes sense that a crime syndicate is running
yes.
a rehab.
Yes. I spilled up. Yeah, I'm sure there are a lot. Here's the thing. I'm sure that there are a lot of rehabs that are essentially crime syndicates, but I doubt that there is a crime syndicate who has opened a rehab.
Uh-huh.
If that makes sense.
Yes, sure. And this isn't really rehab. It's, you know, it's a vague
wellness center
for yes. replenishing your humors.
As I understand the same thing about Esalen. Again, I kind of want to go get a day pass to Esalen.
They sell those.
We should do it sometime.
Yeah. Let's do it.
We should go podcast from Esalen.
I don't know if they would allow us to bring microphones there.
Well,
but maybe.
Why not?
Yeah.
Is there an official Esalen podcast?
I don't know. Well, see, we were talking last night with that there's apparently a guy had an unofficial Jimmy Buffett at Margaritaville
yes.
podcast, and then he got called up to the big leagues.
Of
the official Margaritaville.
License to Chill, the official Margaritaville podcast. Shout out to Patrick. It was nice to meet you last night. I'm going to start listening to your Margaritaville podcast.
How often does that come out? Is that weekly?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I have to look into it.
I'm looking up.
I think so. Yeah, I mean, he's doing Sirius, so like Sirius FM, so he's like doing real professional broadcasting.
Dear Lord, would you fucking believe that Esalen has a podcast called Voices of Esalen?
Voices of Esalen?
Yeah.
What's their most recent
episode? It features provocative, in-depth interviews with the dynamic leaders, teachers, and thinkers who reflect the mission of the Esalen Institute.
Can you hit me with the info on the latest episode?
3 days ago, Bio Akomolafe on tricksterism, post-activism, and artificial intelligence.
Tricksterism?
He's an author, teacher, and modern philosopher whose work challenges the boundaries of conventional thought.
Wow.
He was born in 1983 into a Christian home to Yoruban parents in Western Nigeria. Then they moved to Germany. His dad died when he was young. He's a young, restless academic. Eventually met with scores of traditional shamans to better understand the notion of trauma healing and well-being. Wow. I mean, he honestly kind of sounds cool.
But how many mistresses does he have?
How many mistresses?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Like that other guy.
What guy?
The other wellness guy. From that it was a big story.
Huberman.
Huberman.
Okay.
Come on. That was this week. That was a reasonable joke to make.
Okay. Kind of. Well, you know, it's... okay. That's fine.
Yes.
He didn't have... He, yeah, I guess it was just a plinth of side chicks.
This guy, this thing seems like he's even more holy. The Esalon guy seems like he's even more holistic. As far as I could tell, Huberman's thing is like...
That's just one guess. They have a different guest every time.
Yeah. Well, the Huberman's thing was like how to take cold baths to release your thetans.
Ooh, I think they have... Whoa. They have an old recording.
Mm-hmm.
From
the 70s or 80s? They have like archive stuff?
From the late 80s? Terrence McKenna, Rupert Sheldrank, and Ralph Abraham. Trialogue at Esalon, September 8th, 1989.
Wow. Trialogue?
Trialogue. Not a dialogue.
A trialogue.
A trialogue.
Wow.
The original Try Guys.
Wow. The Esalon podcast. Maybe we should check it out.
Yeah. Why not?
I feel like it's a, you know, I'm going to be like... Ha ha ha, I'm going to start listening to the Esalon podcast as a joke. And then 3 weeks from now, 3 months from
We're
now,
gonna
I'm
going to
be like, you know, my shaman was just telling me that to really reach emotional harmony, one must commit ego death in every action.
I just struggle with the shaman thing because I'm like, you have to pick one guy. I'm like, I need multiple guys. You know what I mean?
My shaman.
Shaman. Not all shaman.
Not all shaman.
I don't know.
Yes,
that's where I struggle. Is that, you know, just trusting one singular voice is like the guy you should listen to.
Yes,
I need options. I gotta weigh my options. Ooh, Universal Studios Hollywood. We live
so
close.
We can go there.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
We live in, get this, Hollywood. No, we don't.
We don't live in Hollywood.
We do not live in Hollywood, but we live close. We live closer to Hollywood than we did before.
Mentally, I'm in Hollywood.
Mentally, I'm in Hollywood. Yeah. Don't talk to me until I've had my Hollywood.
Oh wow, the Baywatch episode with the octopus appears
the
to be in two parts.
Yes,
and it's called Tentacles. Tentacles. Hell yeah!
Guest starring Christine Alfonso. Anyway, anything else from the text that we want to talk about? Koi
certainly
seems to get around. So is the implication that he was like shanghaied from the previous place he was hanging out to this institute and like forcibly committed?
I think he, as a junkie, got roped into the Golden Fang.
Yes. And then the Golden Fang like committed him to this rehab.
But I don't think he's committed to the rehab. I think he's all over the place, right?
Okay.
So I think he just works for them. Remember he was at, he at that Nixon rally?
Yes.
So, like, yes. I think he's now
he's
just part of the
provocateur.
He's out and about doing crazy shit.
Yes.
Because he was, you know, taken as a vulnerable guy and, you know, seems to owe a debt that yes. cannot be paid back. So, I don't know. I mean, many such cases, I guess.
Yes.
You really don't want to be owing anyone a favor. It's better when people owe you
favors. Because when you're in his debt, then you're in his pocket.
Yeah.
And once you get in his pocket, you never get out. That's from Snatch.
That's from Snatch.
We watched that last night.
Chris watched it all, and I watched
about the first
20 minutes.
20 minutes of it.
That's, oh, wow.
Generally how it goes with the late night movies.
It's tough.
Yes.
I find that once I stop talking, then it's only a matter of time before I'm asleep.
Yes.
I basically talk until the minute I stop,
and then then consciousness is not worth it. If I'm not talking, it's not worth. It's not worth being awake.
Oh no!
I might as well just go fall asleep.
That's awful. Yeah, I don't know. It's, you know, we're getting back into it. I think we're really in the weeds. We're right around. I think we've crossed the halfway point of the book.
Mm-hmm.
It's never been, you know, more swirling energies or less clear where they're coming from or why.
Yes.
We still don't really know what's happening.
Yes.
And I don't know if we're ever going to.
The octopus with no head.
The octopus with no head. You think that's what this book is?
Kind of. That's what we were talking about on Chapo on Thursday. About
in what way?
The systems that George H.W. Bush set up at the CIA. A system of systems.
A system of systems.
That can all operate independently through means of self-motivation, i.e. what is best for that system.
Yes.
That ends up working towards the singular goal of the total system without any central coordination.
Mm, okay. Is that supposed to be a utopian like thing, or is that dystopian?
I think it's dystopian because it means that you can't, you know, gone. The idea is gone is the smoke filled room of directors coordinate, like, you know, 12 old men coordinating everything. Everything just runs.
Yeah.
And you don't need coordination.
Yeah.
And thus, if any individual part of it gets broken, it doesn't lead anywhere because there is no central node.
Yes. I don't know what the solution is. Do you?
I mean, not really. But
guys,
that's like the terrifying thing of the paranoid style of thinking. Obviously, you know, we have this little corner of pro paranoia, parapolitics discussion in our section of you know, podcasting.
Yeah.
And between Chapo and Truanon.
Yeah.
But you know, the panacea of paranoid thought is imagining that there is some kind of coordination, that there is an enemy,
yes,
a shadowy figure, a cabal.
Yeah.
Like, and this is why, like, one would say something like QAnon is a more childish view of things, because there is an imagination that there is a direction,
mm-hmm,
for the manifest evil that you see in the world.
Yes.
But when the real black pill of parapolitics is, there is no direction.
There is none. Yes. Which, you know, I mean, that's not to get all black-pilled, but if you see that, if you, like, work at a place,
yeah,
then you see how true that kind of,
yes,
is that, like, there's often no, like, what is the point?
Yeah.
The point is to basically, like, get, like, three people at the top of the org chart rich.
Yes.
And then everyone else is lying to you. Like, yeah. I'm just thinking of, like, a media company that I worked at that, like, the only point was just juicing numbers to tell the boss,
that
to
the
tell their boss,
juiced,
to tell their boss to be, like, great. And then it, you know, filters back. You tell the shareholders and they're happy. And then, like, eventually some kind of push comes to some kind of shove, and it's like, oops, we're not making, you know, the money that we thought we were making, blah blah blah.
Or like how all the Boeing planes are falling apart, and
yeah,
then you, like, crack open the corp, like, what's going on there, and it's, you know, the private equitization of all these companies that just incentivizes everybody to move away from, like, actual you know, quality manufacturing to lowest common denominator,
yeah,
cut every corner to maximize quarterly profits.
Yeah.
That even the people at the top, there are people making these decisions, but they're just responding to the market forces that put them there anyway. It's like,
yeah,
nobody's really got their hand on the wheel, you know?
Yeah. That's why truly, if someone came to me and asked me right now, like, if I don't know what I want to do with my life, or I don't know what kind of job I would want to get, I would just say, like, it truly doesn't, it doesn't matter, and be like, I don't know, get a federal job, something where you, like, clock in and clock out and have, like, a big old clunky computer,
yes,
and, like, all the systems are super old and everything takes forever, but, like, you know exactly how much money you're gonna,
yes,
make, and you, like, go home and you leave work at home because you can't bring your big clunky computer with
I
you.
I mean, more stuff that we've talked about on Chapo this week, that the New York Times released a video that was like, the deep state, they're actually not that bad, but the thing that they were talking about, they weren't talking about, like, you know, guys running black sites in Nigeria or something. They were talking about the lady who works at the EPA under the water purity standards, whose life mission is to reduce the amount of lead in our water from, like, 0.002% to 0.001%.
Sure, yeah,
you know?
Of course. Yeah.
Yes, and sure, that lady has an honorable job, and that's good work.
Thank you for finding
but
them.
You know, as the lady says, if it makes you happy, It can't be that bad.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm also speaking this as a traumatized person who, you know, I put traumatized in scare quotes, but
this is a trauma informed podcast.
It's a trauma informed. The body really does. The body keeps the score.
The podcast keeps the score.
Let me just tell you. I mean, you live this too, although you got out a little earlier than I did. Not realizing that you're in a bubble.
Yeah.
Like, I truly thought every decision I made was like, oh, digital media is just going to keep growing and growing, and there's going to be more and more interesting things to do, so I'll do things according to that. And then it was a bubble, and then it burst, and now those jobs simply don't exist anymore.
It is wild how, like, the course of at least like the direct day-to-day course of probably three-ish years of my life are directly ascribable to the fact that Facebook was overtly and knowingly lying about their video numbers on the feed.
That was like, and that animated like so many decisions that you had to personally make.
Yeah, and that the trickle down effect was like affected like what time I had to get up on the like certain days and like where I like literally physically where I was going, because it affected like what places hired me and what jobs, like, you know, like my physical location and movement through space and time.
Yes.
Was just being like guided by Facebook being like, yeah, we'll just inflate these numbers.
Yes. Yeah.
That's a bubble, baby.
That is a bubble.
Welcome to the bubble, baby.
You don't even know. You don't even know.
No, you
don't
even know.
The example that I like to share from this insane period is that I used to work for a company, and one of the things that I did for them in my job description was run Facebook ads.
Mm-hmm.
Like on the back end, and the budget was insane. Like I was truly every day I would like look at what was being spent and being like, I shouldn't be in charge of this budget. Like, yeah, that's actually insane. And the results were fine, good. I don't know. I was doing my best. And then they sort of like reorganized some stuff and they're like, we've hired a man who like, this is his job. Like, he is a Facebook ads optimization guy.
Mm-hmm.
He knows this system inside and out.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just going to take this off your plate and give it to him. And I felt a little demoralized, like, ah, oh, fuck, whatever. Guess what his results were? The same or slightly worse than mine. Because there is no expertise, yeah, unless you work at Facebook in the ad department.
Yes.
Like where everyone was just making shit up. And they still do. I don't know. Anyway, we're talking about this.
I probably got paid like twice as much as you, right?
Yeah, as a contractor. Anyway, this is all to say the systems of systems, if you truly do look at it, it is mostly people lying and making shit up. And at the age of 34, it's funny that I'm like, they're lying to you, man.
The headless octopus.
Beware the golden fang. Beware the headless octopus.
Beware the headless octopus. Okay, folks. Well, that's good, because now all of the pods this week align in the same thematically.
All podcasts. There is only one podcast in the end, and it's The Search for Truth.
It is. What is podcasting if not man's search for truth?
Yeah, which I would argue we found the truth at the end of Infinite Jest, and now we're just taking a little victory lap.
Yeah,
I feel good. I have everything figured out. I don't need to go to Chris Skylodon. I would like to go like to like a sauna or like a hot spring or something, but that's just for my health. I'm fine.
All right, we'll do this again tomorrow and get ahead on these a little bit.
Yeah,
we can do two the next two weekends, and then we'll be.
Thank you for your patience. We're more than halfway through. We're pushing through it, and then we'll find out what's next.
White Noise.
White Noise.
DeLillo.
Yeah, I'm familiar. I'm familiar with the White Noise. I know all the noises.
Pink Noise, Brown Noise, Green
Noise.
Brown Noise. They keep coming up with new noises.
When I was driving with Amber, babies like Brown Noise, which I mean, questionable. Yeah. Think of all the things that now you can get down to the frequency of what to play for your baby. Did they have that shit when we were kids?
No.
You can really curate the frequencies for your baby now.
What's the frequency, baby?
What's the frequency, baby?
All right. Bye.
Bye.